From New York City, you're about to hear an address by Joseph R. McCarthy, United States Senator from Wisconsin, and Chairman of the United States Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. Senator McCarthy.
Good evening, fellow Americans. Last Monday night, a former president of the United States, while attempting to explain away his promotion of a communist spy, made a completely untruthful attack upon me. Tonight I shall spend but very little time on Harry Truman. He is of no more importance than any other defeated politician. Trumanism, however, becomes an issue insofar as it is embraced by the Democrat Party. Now, the other night, Truman defined what he called McCarthyism. The definition was identical, word for word, comma for comma, with the definition adopted by the communist Daily Worker, which originated the term McCarthyism. And yesterday, the National Committee of the Communist Party issued a 1,000-word statement condemning Attorney General Brownell and lauding Truman for his attack upon me. This statement by the Communist Party was signed by William Z. Foster, National Chairman of the Communist Party, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, and Pettus Perry, all three of whom have been indicted for communist conspiracy against this country. I am sure they will not applaud my speech tonight. Trumanism can perhaps best be defined as the placing of your political party above the interests of the country, regardless of how much the country is damaged thereby. It is the theory that no matter how great the wrong, it is right if it helps your political party. Trumanism also, in effect, says to the head of a household, if you catch a criminal looting your safe, kidnapping your children, and attacking your wife, do not dare turn the spotlight on him. Do not get rough with him. Do not call the police, because if you do, the criminal will have you arrested for disturbing the peace. Now, as to Mr. Truman's speech the other night, let us very briefly examine the unusual series of statements made by him explaining his promotion and retention of a communist spy. Statement number one. After Attorney General Brownell first revealed the fact that Truman had promoted a man known as an espionage agent, the first newspaper report quoted Truman as saying he had never read any of the derogatory material about White. Statement number two. When Truman was confronted with the fact that the FBI report had been placed in his hands, then he was quoted as saying that he fired White as soon as he discovered White was disloyal. Statement number three. Then later, when confronted with the fact that White had not been fired, Truman answered, White was fired by resignation. Now, just what that means, I frankly don't know. Next, Truman was confronted with the letter over his own signature, commending this communist spy in the most glowing terms. And let me quote Truman. Here's what he said. Here's Harry Truman speaking. He says, I am confident, Mr. White, that in your new position, you will add distinction to your already distinguished career. Statement number five. Truman finally came up with the excuse that while he had read the FBI report, which branded White as a spy, that he kept White on and promoted him to a higher job to help the FBI in its investigation of a spy ring. As to this one, I'd like to call upon the testimony of J. Edgar Hoover, a man whose truthfulness has not even been questioned by the Communist Party, believe it or not. On page 136 of the hearings, here's what J. Edgar Hoover says. He says, at no time was the FBI a party to an agreement to promote Harry Dexter White. And at no time did the FBI give its approval to such an agreement. Such an agreement on the part of the FBI would have been inconceivable. Well, there you have it. But after having been caught five times red-handed, Truman comes up with the granddaddy of them all. Here's what he says. He says, oh, but it's all McCarthy's fault. He says, all the fault of McCarthyism. And isn't that nasty McCarthy an awful man? Now, my good friends, there's no reason There's no reason on earth why this fight to expose and remove communists and traitors from positions of power should be a contest between America's two great political parties. Certainly the millions of loyal American Democrats love America just as much. They hate and despise communist traitors just as much as the Republicans do. Certainly, there's no division along party lines among the mothers and fathers and wives of the 140,000 Korean casualties whose miseries have come to them from the trickeries, the betrayals of an administration whose foreign policy was so carefully shaped by the Alger Hisses, the Harry Dexter Whites, the Owen Lattimores, the Dean Achesons, the John Carter Vincents. We should keep in mind that as of tonight, we are engaged in a war which was declared in 1914 by Lenin, repeatedly reaffirmed by Joe Stalin, and approved 2.5 weeks ago by high officials of the Kremlin. It is the communist war against free men. Now, when that first communist declaration of war was made 105 years ago, you could number the active communist leaders on the fingers of both hands. At the time Truman became president, the number of people under communist domination was 180 million. During his term as president, the figure increased from 180 million people to 800 million people. Now, this represents, my good friends, the greatest victory of any brutalitarian dictatorship since time first commenced to run. Why? Is it because communist slavery is more attractive than the clean, fresh air of freedom? Certainly not. Then why? The pattern of communist conquest has been the same in every country over which the Stygian blackness of communist night has descended. Always first, the infiltration of key posts in government by communist traitors, and then the creeping paralysis of fear to speak out and expose the traitors. This fear has been engendered and nurtured not only by the communists, but also by the phony, deluded, fuzzy-minded liberals, in whose book it is a mortal sin ever to expose or criticize a communist. Of course, it's perfectly proper for a communist to scream lies and vituperation at anyone who hurts the communist cause. Thus, my good friends, the picture has been in Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Romania, and every other nation taken over by the Black Death of communism. Thus, the picture has been in our country also. In connection with communist infiltration of our government, let me give you, if I may, very briefly, another case in which Truman intervened in behalf of a communist agent. On April 13, 1950, George Shaw Wheeler, who had been working for the United States government in Europe, deserted to the communist cause. At that time, he denounced what he called, and I quote, the Gestapo methods of the United States. He stated that he was going to stand proudly with the Soviet regime. Wheeler then disappeared behind the Iron Curtain. Now, what does Truman have to do with this? As early as 1944, the Civil Service Commission, Loyalty Board, had found Wheeler disloyal because of communist and espionage activities. Listen to these dates, if you will. On October 4, 1944, Harry Truman, candidate for vice president, wrote a 3-page letter to the Civil Service Commission denouncing the commission in the strongest language for having ordered the dismissal of Wheeler. That is in 1944. In October of 1945, Harry Truman was president. The Civil Service Commission then reversed itself and ordered Wheeler reinstated. And of course, as you know, Wheeler is now behind the Iron Curtain, having admitted that he was an espionage agent. Now add to this the picture of Glasser, Silvermaster, Ullman, Kaplan, and all the rest named in FBI reports as communists. Communists who are kept in high positions of power with access to vital secrets by the Truman administration, and you have some small portion of the sordid picture. My fellow Americans, there's nothing accidental about this picture. It is a pattern of deliberate communist infiltration. Impossible, you say? Yes. Unbelievable, yes. But there you have it. It is all a matter of cold record. And the most amazing and disturbing thing about this incredibly unbelievable picture is that as the danger to this nation is slowly and laboriously exposed, instead of an admission of guilt or stupidity, cheap politicians from coast to coast join the chorus of the communist daily worker and shout, "Oh, isn't this McCarthyism an awful thing? Isn't it terrible to dig out these communists?" Now, how many American young men have died, and how many will die because of stupidity, blindness, and treason, no one will ever know. But what answer do we get when it is exposed? The leader of the Democrat Party, Harry Truman, in the most intemperate language, condemns Attorney General Brownell for giving the American people the facts. He then, of course, proceeds to damn McCarthy, drawing very heavily upon his repertoire of dirty names, because I took some part in the exposure of the communist infiltration of his administration. I would not be concerned about what a discredited politician has to say, except that his leadership on the communist issue is being followed by so many Democrats. I would like to briefly review some of the work of our committee. This may furnish a key to the bitterness of the Truman Democrats, and I emphasize Truman Democrats, toward my work, which they prefer to call McCarthyism. Now for a glance at a few excerpts from the testimony before our committee. On November 19, 1953, we were investigating communist infiltration and potential espionage and sabotage in the huge General Electric plants. Defense officials freely stated that if enemy agents were to sabotage the General Electric facilities, it would deal a crippling blow to our defense attempts. The first witness before the committee, Henry Archdeacon. The question, "Mr. Archdeacon, were you engaged in espionage over the past few weeks?" This question was asked less than a week ago. "Answer, I decline to answer that question on the basis that it might tend to incriminate me." Then I asked him, "As a matter of fact, you have been giving to the Communist Party complete detailed information on everything going on at the General Electric plants. Is that correct?" Answer, "I decline to answer on the basis of the Fifth Amendment." Question, just one further question. "If we were to have a war with Communist Russia, and if the Communist Party ordered you to sabotage, to blow up the facilities at General Electric, this defense plant, would you disobey that order of the Communist Party?" Listen to this answer. "I decline to answer that question on the ground that my answer might tend to incriminate me." Well, this morning, less than 12 hours ago, a witness, Joseph Levitsky, appeared before our committee. Levitsky had until very recently been working in the telecommunications, a lab which was handling secret radar work dealing with the defense of this nation. He refused under the Fifth Amendment, on the grounds of self-incrimination, to tell whether, during the last 30 days, he had been engaged in a conspiracy to commit espionage, and whether during July of this year, he had attempted to get people from the Evans Signal Corps Laboratory to commit espionage. We were investigating espionage in the government printing office, which handles secret material for every department of government. That includes Army, Navy, the Air Corps, Secret Service, Atomic Energy, on down the line. One of the witnesses before the committee was Edward Rothschild. The FBI had given the Truman administration detailed reports upon him and his wife, reports to the effect that they were both communists, that she was an important officer in the Communist Party, that communist meetings were held in their homes, and that he had been engaged in stealing government secrets, including secret codes from the printing office. He was before our committee on August 10 of this year. Now, let me quote a few questions and answers, if I may. Question, is it a fact, Mr. Rothschild, that you have access to secret and confidential material? Answer, yes. Up until today? Answer, up until this moment, Mr. Senator. Question, are you a member of the Communist Party as of this moment? Answer, under the Fifth Amendment, I decline to answer. Question, did you ever steal a secret code book from the government printing office? Answer, again, a refusal to answer under the Fifth Amendment. Question, were you engaged in espionage against the United States on August 9, 1953? Answer, I refuse to answer Fifth Amendment. Well, to get rid of a communist, handling secret material is, of course, important. But it is even more important to discover how a communist could hold a job handling secrets which affected the lives and deaths of 160 million American people for 10, 15, 20 years. So we went into that. So we called the man on the misnamed loyalty board. I think their testimony gives perhaps as clearly as any other the reason why the Truman Democrat administration was crawling with communists. The secretary of the loyalty board was asked the question of why they did not call witnesses whom the FBI could furnish. The answer, listen to this, that was not our practice, Mr. Senator. Then I asked the secretary of the loyalty board this question, is it true that in the Rothschild hearing, you only called witnesses who were suggested by Rothschild? Is it the usual practice to hear only the witnesses whom the accused wants you to hear? Answer, this is by the chairman of the loyalty board. Yes, Mr. Senator, that has been the practice. Next question. Let me ask you this. Does your board operate under the rule that membership in the Communist Party is not sufficient to bar a worker? Answer, that is true. Well, my good friends, this gives you some of picture of why the communists, the fellow travelers, the Truman-type Democrat who placed party above country, screamed so loudly about McCarthyism, why their hatred and venom knows no bounds. Now, a few days ago, I read that President Eisenhower expressed the hope that by election time in 1954, the subject of communism would be a dead and forgotten issue. The raw, harsh, unpleasant fact is that communism is an issue and will be an issue in 1954. Truman's diatribe against those who expose communists is the best proof of that. I would also like to remind those very well-meaning people who speak about communism not being an issue that communism is not isolated from the other great evils which beset us today. For example, when a Harry Dexter White, by his manipulations through the Treasury Department, undermined the money system of nationalist China, when a Lachlan Curry, on White House stationery, countermanded the orders to ship vast amounts of captured German equipment to China to be used in their war against the communists, when the communists and fellow travelers in policy-making positions sold out our friends to our enemies, with the result that 620 million people disappeared behind the Iron Curtain, that is, between 1945 and 1953. When they were doing all of those things, they were making necessary a huge tax burden upon the American people, a tax burden necessary to build up our defenses. They were, in effect, signing the draft call for the hundreds of thousands of young men who had been called to military duty. They were setting the stage for future wars. They were signing the death warrants of unknown numbers of Americans. Therefore, my good friends, practically every issue which we face today, from high taxes to the shameful mess in Korea, is inextricably interwoven with the communist issue. Now, Democrat office seekers from the Atlantic to the Pacific have been proclaiming that McCarthyism is the issue in this campaign. In a way, I guess it is. because Republican control of the Senate determines whether I shall continue as chairman of the investigating committee. Therefore, if the American people agree with Truman, they have a chance to get rid of me as chairman of the investigating committee next fall by defeating any Republican up for election. If the American people, on the other hand, believe in the necessity of digging out and getting rid of the type of communists who have been before our committee, if they believe, as I do, that treason, dishonesty, and stupidity should be exposed wherever and whenever found, regardless of the party label, then their answer is to keep the Republicans in power so we may continue to clean out the Augene stables. But now let's take a look at the Republican Party. Unfortunately, in some cases, our batting average has not been too good. Before looking at some of the cases in which our batting average is zero, let me make it clear that I think that the new administration is doing a job so infinitely better than the Truman-Acheson regime that there is absolutely no comparison. For example, the new administration, in the first 10 months in office, has gotten rid of 1,456 Truman holdovers who were all security risks. And over 90% of the 1,456 security risks were gotten rid of because of communist connections and activities or perversion. 1,456, I would say, an excellent record for the time President Eisenhower has been in office. However, let us glance at a few cases where we struck out. For example, we still have John Patton Davies on the payroll after 11 months of the Eisenhower administration. And who is John Patton Davies? John Patton Davies was number one, part and parcel of the old Acheson, Lattimore, Vincent, White, Hiss group, which did so much toward delivering our Chinese friends into communist hands. Number two, he was unanimously referred by the McCarran Committee to the Justice Department in connection with a proposed indictment because he lied under oath about his activities in trying to put, listen to this, in trying to put communists and espionage agents in key spots in the Central Intelligence Agency. A question which we ask is, why is this man still a high official in our department after 11 months of Republican administration? Now let us examine the failure of my party, if we may, to liquidate the foulest bankruptcy of the Democrat administration. On September 12, 1953, the Chinese communists announced that they would not treat as prisoners of war American flyers who were shot down during the Korean War over Manchuria. On September 10, 1953, the Army announced that some 900 American young men known to have been prisoners of the communists in Korea were still unaccounted for as of tonight, my good friends. Well, why do I bring this situation up tonight in talking about the Republican Party? The Republican Party did not create the situation, I admit. We inherited it. But we are responsible for the proper handling of this situation as of tonight. Now, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to continue to send perfume notes following the style of the Truman-Acheson regime? Or are we going to take the only position that an honorable nation can take, namely that every uniformed American packs the pride and the honor and the power of this nation on his shoulders? And millions of people in my radio and television audience tonight will recall that even in grade school, your hearts beat a bit faster, and you felt a great surge of pride when you heard in song that this was the land of the free and the home of the brave. But let me ask you, how free are we? How free are we when American aviators, fighting under the American flag, at this very moment, on November 24, 1953, are being brainwashed, starved, or murdered behind an iron or bamboo curtain? How brave are we How brave are we when we do not use all of the power of this nation to rescue those airmen and the 900 other military men who have been unaccounted for months. I realize, of course, the low ebb to which our honor has sunk over the past 20 years. But it is time that we, the Republican Party, liquidate this blood-stained blunder of the Acheson-Truman regime. We promised the American people something different. It's up to us now to deliver, not next year, next month. Let us deliver now, my good friends. But how are we going to do it once the nation has allowed itself to be reduced to a state of whining, whimpering appeasement? The cost of regaining national honor may be very high, but we must regain our national honor regardless of what it costs. Now, I know it is easy to talk in general terms about what can be done. Let's be specific. As you know, we've been voting billions of dollars each year to help our allies build up their military and economic strength so that they can help in this day-to-day struggle between the free half of the world and the communist slave half. If that money we give them is being used for that purpose, then it is well spent. If not, then those allies are defrauding us. How does that affect you? As of today, some money was taken out of your paycheck and sent to Britain. As of today, Britain used that money from your paycheck to pay for the shipment of the sinews of war to Red China. What can we do about that? We can deal a death blow to the war-making power of communist China. We can, without firing a single shot, force the communists in China to open their filthy communist dungeons and release every American. We can blockade the coast of China without using a single ship, a single sailor, or a single gun. In this connection, I want to point out that Lloyd's of London, the outfit that keeps track of shipping, according to their records, the shipments to Red China this year have increased over 1,500% over what they were last year. What can we can do? What can we do about it? We can handle this by saying this to our allies. If you continue to ship to Red China while they are imprisoning and torturing American men, you will get not 1 cent of American money. If we do that, my good friends, this trading in blood money will cease. No question about that. I see time is running out. Let me remind you that when the smokescreen of false political righteousness is raised against McCarthyism by Harry Truman or anyone else singing in his choir of deceit, remember that he, Truman, stands on his record as an individual and as a president. He promoted Harry Dexter White, Russian spy. He fired General Douglas MacArthur, one of the greatest living Americans. In conclusion, I would like to quote, as well as I can remember, Abraham Lincoln, who, when discussing the only way this nation could ever be destroyed, said, "All the armies in Europe, all the armies of Europe and Asia combined, with all the wealth of the world in their military chests, with a Bonaparte for a commander, in a trial of 1,000 years, could not place 1 foot upon the Blue Ridge Mountains, could not take 1 drink from the Ohio River. As Lincoln said, from whence then will danger come? If this nation is to be destroyed, it will be destroyed from within. If it is not destroyed from within, it will live for all time to come."
You have just heard an address by Joseph R. McCarthy, United States Senator from Wisconsin.